Hi, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Chris Reisner. Today, I'm joined finally once again by Hashi Bai.
Hello.
And today, we have special guests, Matt Winkler and Lance Olson. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Lance Olson. I'm a group program manager here at Microsoft working on big data technologies in Azure.
I'm Matt Winkler. I'm also a group program manager working on big data.
And what are we going to be talking about today?
Big data.
Fantastic. I thought so, but I wanted to check. I thought maybe something else, maybe. All right, well, we're going to skip the news today and just jump right into the presentation. So let's see what you guys have to talk to us about.
Yeah, so we wanted to start by walking through what we're going to cover today, and then also this is the first in a few different episodes we're going to use to talk to folks about big data.
That's right. We really haven't had a lot of big data lately on Cloud Cover, so we're gonna make up for that right
That's
now.
That's right. So this is a five-dose, first in a five-dose series on big data. So today we'll focus on really the most common use cases that we've seen with Azure and big data and what customers are doing there, and also some of the services that fit into the big data workload and how they fit together. And then in the future, we'll drill into HD Insight and also some of the use cases for specific technologies like HBase and Storm.
Okay. Now, will we be actually explaining what big data is? Because I'm not sure that's going to fit on the show. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, we don't have enough tape for that to happen today.
Okay.
No, actually, yeah, we are. In fact, we can jump right into that. What we're seeing with big data is that there's a series of things that have really come together to cause the patterns and the use cases that customers are really trying to achieve with the information that they have to change. And one of them is the volumes have gone up, so there's more data really coming through the system. There's also different characteristics in terms of the types of data that they use. It's more likely, there's more of an expectation now with our customers that they don't want to know maybe at the end of each day or the end of each week when something happens in their system. They want to know immediately when it happens. So right. Real time really has increased. There's a much broader set of types of data and structured and unstructured data and wanting to be able to use those types of data together. And that doesn't work as well with some of the traditional approaches that we've used. And so new technologies have come around in the big data space to help with those.
So basically we've got a lot more data, we've got different kinds of data, and we've got people who want to know more things about that data faster.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We're just trying to solve this many-faceted problem with this big data stuff.
And I'll add one more kind of wrinkle to that, which is the type of questions that people want to ask is also changing. And so if you think about a lot of your kind of standard reporting apps, we're going to start off and look backwards and say, how many widgets did I sell this week? Mm-hmm. Or how many people did I interact with on my website? But we're starting to see people move to asking a new type of question, which is, oh, I'd actually like to know, based on customer profile and the history of this order item, what's the probability that this is an order that's going to be returned to me? I want to be kind of, and this is what people will talk about as predictive analytics, mm-hmm. which is they don't want to look back. They actually want to start to build out a model that says, I think this may happen.
Yeah, we did an episode on a Power BI functionality a little while back, and that was one of the things we talked about there, where it's less a matter of people know, you know, hey, this is the stuff, these are the queries I want to run, so, you know, build up this process that can actually run this giant query for me. It's, well, today I want to run this, tomorrow I want to run something else, but I don't want to wait to build out whatever infrastructure we need just so I can run this query.
Yeah.
So, you know, big problems to solve.
Yeah, and I think the other point is we're starting to see a lot where the cloud is where the data is being born. And so with the economics around storage in the cloud, it's very natural to just keep all your data in its raw form, mm-hmm. And then save that and say, at some point in time, I'm going to ask a question. I don't know what the question is today, but it's cheap enough for me to put it there. And so you actually see a lot of kind of the cloud-born companies leading the way in terms of pushing a lot of the big data work. So companies like Twitter or Facebook or Pinterest for instance.
And that just gets back into that even more data than, you know, ever before. Because if you're not getting rid of this data, you just have tons and tons of data center. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of my kind of favorite examples on this is that if you think about we all know that data lives for a long time and it tends to live longer than applications. And so when we build relational databases, it's really important to know what kinds of questions we're going to ask of the data up front. And that factors into how we build the schema for the database. And one of the core principles for a lot of the big data systems that we're using here is this notion of schema on read, which allows you to define schemas over time and even have them change and not get killed in terms of performance or your ability to manage the underlying data.
Mm, makes sense.
So we've got a view here that talks a little bit about the, you know, the next question is kind of how does the cloud factor in? And Matt already, I think, touched on some of the key things. When we look at folks who are doing big data, when one of the common things that they do is they have this belief that when they look at their business and the future of their business, they know their data is growing a lot, and they don't see that stopping. And they really want to be able to apply these techniques of like predictive analytics to the data and to their business. If they look out far enough, it becomes a question of, am I going to spend the rest of my time just building out data centers and managing data centers versus actually focusing on my business logic and the decisions I want to make in my business? So that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons that we really see this happening, where people look at big data, they also look at the cloud as a good fit together. Elasticity is another common one. A lot of the workloads can be cyclical, like maybe at the end of the month or the end of the quarter, you have a bunch of analysis you need to do across your customer data combined with all the telemetry of the usage of your website, and you want to look and see how that all comes together. You can actually, using the cloud, you don't have to buy all the hardware for peak capacity. You can deploy for peak capacity, and then you can spin the clusters down when you don't need them.
And that's a scenario where instead of paying for hardware you don't need, you only pay for it when you're using it. So that end of the month where you need those clusters to perform those analysis, you're only paying for that in that, you know, the one day, the end of the month when you need it.
That's right. We see people that you can get a 400 node Hadoop cluster going in Azure in just a matter of minutes, and then when you're done, just spin it down and move on.
I think I've got one of those running in my closet, actually.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
All right, so moving along, I think we also, there's one other thing we want to talk about there, which is with the cloud, we've taken an approach that is a lot more inclusive than some of the services we've built before, which is really a combination of open source technology and services that we have running across Azure. So we have a broad set of services that deal with big data. We certainly have a service that's focused primarily on big data, which is HD Insight. We'll talk more about that in the future. But in reality, you'll see this as we look at some of the topologies in the customer use cases. Most cases, customers are using a set of Azure services together to create their information flow and their information processing.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some of them listed here. Machine learning comes into play, search. A data factory is what you can use to orchestrate workflows across all of these pieces. Event hubs and stream analytics are great for processing data as it comes in and having business logic that runs over that data. Of course, we have SQL databases, and that's a common output point and input point that we see for big data jobs. Maybe they do a bunch of processing and then land the results into a database so that people, like information workers in their organization, can then go look at the results. And then we also have DocumentDB, which is a NoSQL document store, which has tight integration with HD Insight and a bunch of our other tools, services here. We've also done something here where we've partnered with a lot of the other key players in the big data space to have their stacks running on Azure. So you can actually share data between any of the services that run in Azure, and you can pick the services that best align to your use case.
So, I mean, we've got a ton of stuff built on Azure for doing big data, and then we're also partnering with a lot of open source stuff. So if you've already you have a small installation in your own data center, but you need to massively expand, well, it's pretty easy to port that over into Azure then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. Right. And then I think the other thing that's interesting is we're starting to see teams that build connectivity to common open source big data protocols. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the data factory can be used to schedule work that's running in HD Insight, which is the Microsoft service. It can also run stuff that's running in a Cloudera or Hortonworks cluster that's running in IaaS. The DocumentDB team recently put out a set of connectors for Hadoop. So any Hadoop cluster can either read data from or write data to DocumentDB. And so it's really kind of cool to see you've got all of these building blocks that you can use, mm-hmm. and over time, we and the community both are building interesting connections between them.
It's really cool because, you know, they all solve a little small different piece of the problem, and it's nice to see how you can connect those.
Yeah, one other thing to call out here is when people do big data in Azure, it doesn't mean that all of your data has to be in Azure. And that's a key, I think a key differentiation point for Azure and for Microsoft is we have, you know, we have customers with servers that are running on premises and using services in the cloud, and it's very common for us to deal with cases where the data is actually spanning. You might be pulling, you might have a customer database that's sitting on your own network on premises, and then you might have just a customer ID that's associated with a bunch of web log activity that you see happening up in the cloud, and you can combine those in a way that, you know, only pulls the information on either side that you want to be pulled there. And that's a critical thing that we often deal with as we work with customers in building these solutions, is that hybrid scenario.
Yeah, and that's something we see across all of Azure, is, you know, the enabling that hybrid scenario, which is great to see.
Yeah. All right, so moving along here, we wanted to then talk, I don't know, Matt, do you want to walk us through this architecture?
Yeah, so this architecture originally came from a bunch of work that we were doing around kind of Internet of Things scenarios. This is a really common scenario that we see. You've got a lot of sensors or devices that are globally distributed. So you immediately have this initial problem, which is, how do I get all of this into my cloud? And so that's where we started with this. But this app pattern actually mimics a number of things beyond Internet of Things. But it kind of shows where the various Azure services can fit in. And you shouldn't view the services that are on here or not on here as an exhaustive list. That's the nice thing about the work we're doing with the open source ecosystem, which is if someone wants to use Kafka, which is an open source queuing system, mm-hmm. rather than Event Hubs, that's okay. They can spin up a bunch of IaaS machines and they can run Kafka in there. But just to kind of talk through some of the various Azure services that surface up here, Event Hubs is certainly one that aids in massive, large-scale ingress, which is I'm trying to land all of these events.
Right, and this is the sort of thing where if you have those IoT devices, mm-hmm. this is what they're sending the data to, they're sending up to Event Hub.
Absolutely. We've worked with a video game studio that lands all of the telemetry from the various consoles and phones that the games run on. They have a very similar problem. Mm-hmm. It's not really kind of the classic IoT sensor scenario, but it's the exact same thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of how people think of, you know, oh, this is exactly what you do for IoT, but it's only for IoT, but it really isn't. You know, you could replace that IoT with anything that's basically producing data that you want to save.
And those could also be apps running in the Azure data center as well.
Sure.
So as I've now got this stream of events coming in, customers also want to be able to react in real time to those streams that are flowing through the system. This is not where you're going to do super, super deep analysis, but this is where you want to detect, hey, I think there's a machine that's going to fail. Mm-hmm. I've crossed some critical threshold. I need to alert someone. And so that's where streaming technologies really come into the picture. And so you can either use Azure Stream Analytics, which gives a SQL syntax, deploy that bound to your event hubs, and you can start processing streams. Inside of the HD Insight service, you can run something called Apache Storm, which is a real-time event processing system that was built for Twitter. It was built at Twitter. And so that gives you a lot of flexibility and control to say, hey, I'd like to transform the data. I want to enrich the data.
And Storm's one of the things we'll be talking about in one of the later episodes,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Then you're landing your data into storage. Right, going back to that point about the data is valuable to keep in its raw form. Dave Campbell, who's the CTO of Cloud and Enterprise, sometimes likes to refer to this as the digital shoebox. Right, I just want to keep putting it all in there because I know there's something valuable and I'll come back to it.
One day I might want to get into that shoebox and, you know, take out those old pictures.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we think of storage that way. People are going to land their raw data and then they're going to apply some amount of batch processing on top of that. And if you want to be able to spin that up in something like a Hadoop cluster running in IaaS, For smaller data volumes, you could just spin up a worker role and party on the data that way. Mm-hmm. You can spin up an HD Insight cluster. And what you're doing there is you're running a set of transforms on the data. You're doing some initial query. You could be doing some machine learning on top of that data. And you're outputting that then to a system that's going to consume it. And that could be something as simple as a relational database that a web app is hitting. Mm-hmm. It could be as complex as a massively scaled out data warehouse that you're running your key reporting apps against.
Right. And that simple scenario you said of just, you know, a relational database, if you were building like a dashboard that you want to display data of, that would be a perfect way of doing it. You just
absolutely
put them there and your website shows this data.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And again, kind of at each one of these columns, Microsoft has services that we can use, that a customer can use.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of great things in the open source ecosystem as well. And really, that's kind of the nice part about the model is you can really plug and play with a lot of those.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Sometimes we find that people, just in terms of when we recommend, what we recommend when, typically we'll recommend the PaaS, the more of the PaaS service you can get, the better of a job we can usually do for making life simple for developers to write the applications.
Sure.
But cases where you might pick the open source components, and even the open source ones, several of those, we will run those as a PaaS service, are examples where you might have an on-premises deployment that's working with a cloud deployment, like something like Storm, and you want to actually be using the same technology on both ends. That gives you the ability to have parity between there. It also gives you flexibility where you can actually move your workload from the cloud and increase it in the cloud or increase it on-prem depending on the nature of your business and how it evolves. And so it gives people a lot of flexibility in terms of the interfaces and the code that they write and the portability of that code.
It's the same story we have with kind of Azure in general. You know, if you want the most speed, you know, the easiest speed or greatest speed, you know, the greatest support, the easiest flexibility, at
That's
least
right.
from just building, you'd pass. If you want complete flexibility over everything, well, you can do anything you want in a VM. It just won't work.
That's right. And another common trend that we see here is people tend to apply, once they get that data built up in the storage system, like Matt was talking about, they'll apply multiple workload patterns on top of that data. So you might start by doing, let's say that you're collecting data that's events from cars and delivery vehicles, and you're basically looking to see if they are functioning well and if they're healthy, maybe the oil pressure is going up or something like that. They'll start out usually with a batch mode where they're actually detecting every night to see how all the vehicles are doing. And then as they get more data built up, they'll learn. They'll do historical analysis and look and say, all right, now these three vehicles in our fleet failed last month. Why did they fail? And could we have found that from the data we collected? And they'll use that with machine learning, and they'll start to develop models that would allow them to, in more real time, predict. And so then they'll bring in a streaming solution like Azure Stream Analytics or Storm, and they'll start to apply that logic that they learned from the historical analysis to their real time models and then build alerts. And then we'll see that becomes cyclical, because you can always go back and look and say, all right, now we learned and we eliminated those. You know, we got more proactive on those use cases. Now another 2 months worth of data has been gathered. Can we learn more? And we'll see that kind of iteration happening where they mix the workloads together to build a better solution.
It's a really great example of how you can go from just getting the data to understanding the data to then using that data to improve your process all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah. I think we were going to dive into some customer cases now.
So we'll talk about two customer case studies. This one's one of my favorites. So this is an organization called Just Giving. They're a social giving company. And so what they do is enable people to connect with causes and donate money to that and then try and rally their friends to support that cause as well. And you know, one of the interesting sets of data that they're sitting on top of is this entire deeply connected web of all of the people who have created causes, all of the people who have donated to causes, how those people are connected, a whole library of interesting causes. And they wanted to increase engagement. Mm-hmm. They wanted to increase people, you know, coming back and using the site more. you know, their business is helping people, and so they wanted to do more. They wanted to grow that business, and so this is one of those things that big data makes possible, which is they've got this massive graph. It's kind of a fun computer science problem to think about. There's, you know, 81 million people nodes in the graph. There's a bunch of causes, thousands of causes, and so the graph ends up being, you know, millions of nodes, hundreds of millions of edges. Hey, let's do some interesting analytics on top of this, because what they want to be able to do is say, oh, we saw that, you know, you donated to this or you engaged with this cause. You might also be interested in and provide things that are really relevant to me. Mm-hmm. And so they've got, you know, data scientists that are trying to tweak the algorithm, and that's data that lands out of their web app into the cloud, inside of Azure, and then they use HD Insight to create a cluster on top of that, run analytics on top of this graph, and then produce some output that then goes back into Azure Tables. It moves into the on-prem, into the SQL Server that they've got in their app, and you kind of have this nice virtuous cycle. And they've been able to see a real increase in the engagement of their customers with the site by leveraging big data.
So like in this situation, they basically built a recommendation engine where they know if you've donated to this cause, you're probably going to be interested in X, Y, and Z. This so we're going to show you these other causes.
Yeah, this one might be interesting to you.
Great. Now, could we create a Just Giving campaign for Hashi to get a new computer?
You know, you could
this
definitely go,
you could
go check it out.
You could create a campaign for just about anything. There's a question as to what kind of funding you'd get.
But
you could create a campaign.
So
He seems like pretty effective.
Yeah, he seems pretty effective with that.
Yeah, I'm taking notes.
Good. I want to see good notes later.
Yeah, actually, this does bring up a question. Seeing like the diagrams and the stuff you talk about, it sounds to me, at least, it's still very complex. Right? It may involve a lot of algorithm analysis and even special data scientists to be involved. Are there efforts from Azure's side to make all those more approachable to a common developer?
Absolutely. That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. You know, there's kind of a couple of different angles to what we do when we think about big data in Azure. Mm-hmm. One is to simply make it available, make it manageable, make it supportable, run it with an SLA for people. But then also, we want to really lower the barrier to entry in terms of making it a whole lot easier to get to writing queries, to be able to understand your data types. Mm-hmm. And there's work we've done. For instance, there's now Visual Studio tooling for Hadoop. So that if you've got an HD Insight cluster with the Azure SDK, you can just access that in Visual Studio and start writing a query. Mm-hmm. Now, what's still, so that's making it easier to use. Some of these things are still about growing new skills. Like the ability to ask these types of questions or to build out a predictive model, you know, there's more behind that than let me just write a big select statement and run a SQL query, mm-hmm. right? It's I have to understand the output, I have to remember a little more math. And that's something I think we're also trying to make easier to use. If you look at Azure ML, for instance, mm-hmm. that's a lot easier to use and more presentable and consumable for folks mm-hmm. than kind of some of the more kind of command line driven tools.
I see. Yeah, I'm looking forward to more episodes on details.
Yeah, I was going to say in some of the future episodes, we'll drill into the products, and we have also been building experiences into the products that are solution focused. So we'll give you a script, for example, that shows you how to build a recommendation, a set of recommendations based on movie ratings or log activity. Mm-hmm. And then you can modify that script right inside the products, right inside the services, the experience around the services. You can modify the script and then rerun it against your data in ways that you want. And those are some of the things that we're doing to make it so that you don't have to know the algorithms from scratch. You can actually take built ones that work and then modify them to your needs.
Yeah. I think things like that are really useful. As a web developer, I know I have some data, maybe not qualified as big data, but mm-hmm. I have enough data. I want to get some intelligence out of it. But I really don't have the expertise to really build a really complex model. But if some guidance available for me to tweak an existing sample to do something useful, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, we've got a sample in HD Insight that lets you click, just point and click, point at the logs that come out of an Azure website and get a set of interesting queries that run on top of that.
Nice.
We'll walk through that probably in the next episode.
Cool.
Great. Yeah.
Remind me to do that.
Yeah, I will.
So that's just getting. There's one more that we wanted to highlight here, which is Rockwell Automation. So these guys, they do a lot of work with manufacturing and oil and gas. And they think of these guys as the folks who would instrument like a robotic arm that might be sitting in a manufacturing assembly line. And that arm is sending information back so that they know that it's operating according to spec. Now, in this case, they're working with one of the big oil and gas companies to instrument these systems they built, which are these liquefied natural gas dispensers. And these things are all over the world, and they're unmanned stations, so they need to be running optimally at all times, and they need to be highly instrumented so that they can manage them and make sure they're running well. So what they did in this case is they instrumented the sensors, and the sensors are taking readings basically all the time, like every second or so they're taking readings, and they're queuing those up in a local queue on site, and then about every 5 minutes they transmit the latest batch up into Azure, up into Azure storage. And then they have a whole set of workflows that they go through to run queries using HD Insight and using the Data Factory to kind of coordinate the workflow to run queries over those over the logs that they've gathered from those sensors. And they can look at things like what's the temperature of the dispensers? Are they within range? And what's the level of pressure? Is it what we would expect, or is there something going on there? Do they have the right level of power coming to them, or are there issues maybe with the power grid in the area? So they can detect any number of problems that might happen with those. And we also see cases where they can even, a lot of times they'll have smart devices that they're dealing with, and so they can learn from the problems they have, and they can send commands back to the devices and have them change their behavior so that they compensate for issues that might be going on. And that's another kind of scenario that we see happen here. And then, kind of like we talked about before, one of the things they'll do is they'll roll up aggregates of all that data they're collecting and put it into a nice relational store so that they can run reports against that using their BI tools that they're really familiar with that know how to connect to SQL.
Very cool.
So that's been another great one that we've been excited about. I gotta say, there are just a ton of, like, we could do a whole series with you guys on the variants and the number of cool things that customers are doing in this space is just been a blast for us. Mm-hmm. And it ranges from, gas stations to social giving and just about everything in between. So it's been a pretty exciting space to work in. And, it kind of feels like one of these areas where the world is just getting started with how much they can do with these approaches and how much better of a job they can do of understanding their customer and understanding their business and really differentiating themselves through the use of their data.
Well, this is really cool. I'm really excited to see in the next few episodes how to really start using some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Actually, before we move on, can I ask one detailed question? You mentioned in this scenario there's some kind of command control is going the opposite direction, going to the devices. So in the canonical architecture, we see the data is flowing from left to right, but in this case, it's doing the other direction.
That's right.
So are there patterns or services we're providing to enable those kind of scenarios, or this is a project-by-project basis?
So there are patterns that we'll talk about as we go through some of the cases in the upcoming series where we can recommend how people do this. I'd say there's not a lot of framework that we use today that is push button for how you connect these up, because the devices often have their own interfaces that that require knowledge of the interface of that device. Mm-hmm. But there certainly are services in Azure that you can use that manage both directions of the communication, things like Service Bus and, like we have here, the Notification Hub for in the case where you're connecting back to a mobile device.
I see.
Great. Well, I believe that's it for episode one.
I believe that's it.
I think
yeah.
so.
All right, great. Well, I'm excited. Yes, I'm excited for the rest of the episodes. I'm sure everybody out there is. Do you guys have Twitter handles in case people want to reach out to you before they've seen the rest of the episodes, but just to, you know, get a hold of you?
About Matt does. He is the Twitter guy, so we'll turn that over to him.
You can follow me at mwinkle.
Gotta give us one of these.
At mwinkle.
Perfect. We'll get that put in there.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Absolutely. Well, thanks, guys, for coming on. Appreciate it. Yeah. Looking forward to episode two. And thanks, everybody out there, for watching. Make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Thanks.